dripping of brown.
Sir?
What is it, Smithers?
I'm afraid all those players have retired and passed on. In fact, your right fielder has been dead for 130 years.
Welcome to the Kauffman Show. Dave Kauffman, Jay Farrar, here with you for another week. Here with you for the next, foreseeable future. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night, Jay.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm great, man.
Good.
Yeah. It's been a very fun day.
It's been a fun past 2 days.
Yesterday was...
It wasn't a fun past 5 days.
No.
But the last two
were... Been a brutal past 5 days.
Yes,
but to be able to have had the Simpsons to dive into today, my job today was to immerse myself in the Simpsons. Pretty good job.
Yeah, I'm sure you had a big problem doing that.
Pretty good job. And after the heaviness of last night was wonderful. Let's just get that off the top right away. Last night's Gary Carter tribute at the Bell Center was fantastic, and I'm so impressed, and I want to thank Donald Beauchamp and Dominic Saillant and the rest of the marketing crew at the Canadien de Montréal. I can't imagine how much stress those guys are under.
Well, yeah, it's a very demanding market that they're trying to appease.
I spoke with Donald Beauchamp on Friday, and he did not release any details about the Carter tribute, but he promised me that there would be a tribute befitting the man. That was the quote he used. And I don't know if you guys know this, but Donald was a big Expos fan. So he took this one to heart, and I thought it was perfect. And
it was almost perfect. Yeah.
Go ahead. What was your problem?
UP. I wasn't too happy with that.
UP was not the center of attention.
Actually, he was. That's what I didn't like.
You mean the spotlight during the moment of silence?
Well, no, at the end. Yeah. I mean, when they have a spotlight down there, and he's down there at center ice, where usually Jean Béliveau comes out, and I just thought it was a little bit childish.
I was afraid that UP was going to be the only commemoration.
That is true.
Because he was not, I was more than happy to see UP in his old. It made me feel all like a kid again to see UP in his Expo stuff.
And that would have been fine. It would have been fine for me if he was walking around the arena and he happened to be wearing his Expos gear. And they showed him from time to time on the big screen, you know, hey, look, UP happens to be wearing his old Expos gear. That would have been a cool little tribute. But when you just finished this video montage and, you know, the man has passed away. You finish the video montage. You don't have any invited guests. You have the moment of silence. And then the spotlight goes down on this orangutan in the middle of the rink.
He's a Muppet.
Whatever he is.
No, I mean that complimentary. Like, he was purchased from the Muppets.
Was he?
Yeah.
Well, his mouth doesn't move.
He's a Jim Henson creation.
Okay. And he's standing there, and he's kind of miming. You know, he's like, oh, woe is me. Yes, I'm here. Yes, I miss Gary Carter. It's stupid.
Let's play the game, Jay, that the person who is UP is the same person that was UP. And maybe there was actually some sadness in there, and somebody who remembers.
But we don't know that.
Like I said, let's play the game.
Okay.
I have a lot of trouble picking apart flaws with that ceremony. You were there we were there together with Anakin Slade as well. We were bedecked in our Expos apparel. And we're going to get into all of this throughout the show tonight. But first, we're going to talk about The Simpsons. Because 20 years ago tonight really was the moment that solidified me as a Simpsons fan for life. It's the 20th anniversary of Homer at the Bat. Yesterday was the 500th episode of The Simpsons. 500 episodes, Jay. What are we at? 12?
Yeah. No, I think we're at more than that.
Whatever we're at, it's very impressive that we're...
that it's more than one.
That's right.
Yeah.
and we're going to be speaking with some great guests tonight. We've got David Silverman right around the corner. David Silverman was a producer with The Simpsons. He directed The Simpsons movie. He wrote the rule book on how The Simpsons are drawn. I'm so excited. I'm going to geek out for like 15 minutes. Just guaranteed. I'm going to fully geek out, and it's going to be great. We've got Rick Miller on the show. McHomer. Saw him at the Fringe many years ago. He's got a run coming up in Winnipeg at the Manitoba Theater for Young People. We'll tell you all about that. We've got Steve Sachs on the show tonight, Jay.
Steve Sachs. Former Dodger great Steve Sachs.
And then we've got some celebrities piping in. We've got actor Elias Tufexis will call in. Nick Dyka, Juno Award-winning artist from Arkells, will call in. Andrew Buchholz. Last time we spoke with him, he was just with Just. He was with Yahoo. He's also with Awful Announcing right now. This kid is going places. He says he's got a good Billy Carter Simpson story for us.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And around 12:30, we're going to open up the phone lines to all of you. And we look forward to hearing you talk about Gary Carter. We know that a lot of people want to share their memories and their stories. It's going to be laughter, then tears on the Kaufman Show tonight. And we're going to take a little break, and we're going to be right back with David Silverman.
Hey, Mort, remember when we used to make out to the zoo?
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board, flying the plane for us. How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm very well. How are you, gentlemen?
We're great, and we're really excited to bring in our next guest. He's been making me laugh for nigh on 25 years. David Silverman's been on The Simpsons since 1987. He directed the movie. He produced much of seasons 3 and 4, which I know for me are, well, it's really exciting, and I'm probably going to geek out a lot right now. He also worked at DreamWorks, Pixar, Blue Sky, likes to draw funny things, likes to play the tuba, and here he is. Good evening, David.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. How are you all doing?
We are absolutely fantastic. It was really nice to think back to where I was 20 years ago today.
Yeah, that was a great episode. If we're talking about what I think we're talking about.
We are. I hope, as long as we're talking
we're talking softball, aren't we?
We are, from Maine to San Diego. And
that was a really amazing show. I mean, and a lot's been written about it, but I just have some friends over here right now. One of the things I wanted to point out, by the way, first off, it was directed by a guy who was absolutely picture perfect to direct it.
That would be Jim Reardon, right?
Jim Reardon is a dyed red in the wool Red Sox fan, you know, ever since cradle. And at that time, by the way, he was long suffering.
Yes, of course. Fan. Of course. Well, we should also point out to our audience that that is not the same Jim Reardon that used to be the Expos closer in the 1980s.
No, not as such. Not quite. No, a little different. Although I got to tell you, Jim Reardon is a hell of a softball player, and when he's up at the plate, everybody stands back because he will smack it right out of the park there. Yeah. So anyhow, he was the perfect, and also he's hilarious. He's a great, great, funny cartoonist, and has a great sense of timing, and a really, by the way, brilliant writer. He had a story on Wall-E up at Pixar.
Oh wow!
And he's just an overall brilliant, great, great guy.
That's an interesting little anecdote. Of course, it's a name that we've always seen, and especially as Montreal baseball fans, it sort of tickled us. But it's it's good to know that he's a baseball fan as well. And
not only that, I have to say just one more thing. When the Red Sox finally won the World Series, he was so happy. He told me, he said, "And now the Red Sox will just be another team. They'll no longer be hauling up those clips of the Bambino and the Great Big Curse. It'll just sometimes they'll win, sometimes they'll lose. And that'll be fine by me." he's now a happy man.
Well, it must be a nice feeling to have that. I know that I imagine if there's any Cubs fans on staff, they're still suffering.
I know. That's a tough one. That's really hurts. And I want them to clear the curse too. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we all do.
Yeah, just one time. At least, even you guys in Montreal, I understand.
Well, you know, we will not have that chance again. But luckily, the Simpsons has done a good job of keeping the Expos memory alive. It's peppered with Montreal Expos references, that show.
I know, it's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, where did that come from?
Well, I don't know. it came from somebody. I can't recall.
Are there a lot of Canadians that work on the show?
There is a fair amount. By the way, we got a number of animators from Canada because there's some very great schools. Sheraton School, I think that's the name of it. Many, many great people. John Chris Verlucci of the great Ren and Stimpy. He's a wonderful import from Canada.
Huh, did I know that.
But I'm trying to think of who the writers were there from Canada. You know, Tim Long, of course, is from Canada. He wasn't on the show at the time. I couldn't tell you.
Well, I think that it's definitely thought of as an American show, but there have been nods to Canada throughout the years that I think just shows the universality of The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's a connection, too, and also, it's, you know, it makes us laugh. It makes us and Canadians laugh, so we can find jokes that are just really good and you know, mostly harmless.
I read that you've been doing Simpsons sketches since March of 1987, which puts it at almost 25 years.
Yes, it'll be 25 years on March. Oh, man, I have to get a calendar. I think it's around March 2024, something like that.
Wow.
That we first did the very first Goodnight Simpsons, the first Tracy Ullman show.
The Rockabye Baby sketch.
Yes. Actually, that was one of our fun things, doing the Rockabye Baby. I did one of the first Maggie Pacifier cycles, and that was sort of my thing. And we modified it when we did the show, because the Pacifier cycle was a little more difficult, a little more tricky. It was on one frame, and I think there was like even an odd number of frames, and like a whole frame in the middle. It was just like, oh man, we got to simplify it. These are the things we think about, my friends. Is everybody still awake out there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody in Radio Land's wide awake. They're feeling refreshed that there's a little bit of Simpsons talk and not some hockey talk for once all day.
Well, so. We could talk about hockey if you like.
We could. Maybe we'll get to the hockey episode if there's enough time. But
that'd be great.
Frankly, there's too many things that I want to get to. As the animator, I want to talk about the recent Simpsons a little bit. And yes. Did you have the opportunity to work with Banksy last year?
No, I didn't. Not really. No, I didn't really work on that particular thing. The big bow goes to Karen Carnegie. She directed the segment, and she did a great job. You know, Banksy did the storyboard and all that, and then there were notes from Fox, which were actually not too bad considering, you know, how fantastically subversive it was. And Karen did an awesome job executing the board and timing it out and so on.
It was wonderfully subversive, and that's something that The Simpsons has been renowned for since the start. I go back to when I was a little kid and seeing George Bush talk about how we need more people on TV like the Waltons and less on TV like The Simpsons.
That's when we knew we had arrived, if it makes sense, some sort of statement of public policy. Really? You want to talk about our show? You want to like jokes for us? You know, we do jokes professionally, but, you know, have at it.
Yeah, but you know what? They talked about Murphy Brown, too, and that didn't stick around for 25 years.
That's true. Yeah, probably people don't remember Murphy Brown as well. No offense to people on Murphy Brown. Oh, now I'll get letters.
Oh, I doubt it. I hope you don't get letters about that. If so, you know what? You can send Candace Bergen to me.
That's right.
We'll take care
of it. Well, actually, come to think of it, in 2012... I don't think anybody gets letters anymore. So the post office is doing so badly.
People still watch Murphy Brown, probably still write letters as well. So.
Good point, Jay.
I think the post office would appreciate if people, all you people who are angry at me, please write a letter, not an email, let's write a letter, please. And buy stamps.
It will get
buy
there.
Buy a lot of them.
It'll get there sometime after the 600th episode, I imagine.
Absolutely. Hey, we're after Gunsmoke's record.
Yeah, well, you're only 140 away, right?
Something like that. Actually, I think by the end of this season, we'll be at I probably shouldn't say, but okay. We'll be at a point where we can catch up with Gunsmoke eventually. As long as everybody out there in Radioland continues watching The Simpsons, and please tell your pals, and watch
not
it
a problem.
On TV. It's ancient. It's ancient and dying.
Do you think that The Simpsons is sort of the last vestige of regular television?
Well, you know, as Yogi Berra says, it's very hard to make predictions, especially about the future. So I'll shut up about that one.
Well, I look at it as sort of the last of the unplugged gems, if you will. I mean, now you have TV shows that are premiering on Netflix or web series solely. And I mean, is The Simpsons even available on like a Hulu in the States or a Netflix in the States?
Yes, it's on Hulu. And okay. I don't know what else it's on, but We're on a few things.
We're in conversation with David Silverman from The Simpsons, and I'm geeking out, and I'm having a very fun time with it. And I want to ask you, David, I want to ask you a million things, but we'll try and pare it down for the sake of editing.
Put it in alphabetical order, and let's just have at it.
Impossible. the McBain movie that sort of came about last year, people noticed that there was a continuum to all of the different McBain things. How long was it that you guys sort of thought, why haven't people picked up on this yet?
On the McBain, I'm sorry, what?
I don't know if you splice together the four or five different McBain Mendoza movies throughout the years, if you actually put them together, there's a beginning, a middle, and the end, and an end to it.
Oh, yes.
This is something that people did not realize until very recently.
Right. I don't know if that was a conscious thought, because now we're talking about something I'm less privy to about, you know, what the writers are thinking there. I think it's just sort of natural that, in a sense, we were being parodying various segments of what you will find in an action film. You know, they're very archetypal, cliché-ic scenes, and we're parodying things that are familiar to the audience. Otherwise, parody doesn't work unless you're familiar with what you're parodying.
Hmm.
So I think after a number of McBain parodies, you could probably splice them all together and say, oh, right, here's the entire arc of the film. But I suspect part of it that was not really conscious. I know that when we did the first McBain, which was in the show that I did, it was the Way We Was episode, we weren't thinking of the long term. Of course, there was the actual movie called McBain.
You know? Yeah, that was wasn't Christopher Walken in that, or there was
there was an actual movie.
Yeah. Yeah,
yes, Christopher Walken was in that.
Boy, don't ask me where I pulled that out of. Believe me, I'm not that fast with Wiki. Believe me.
I think it did very poorly, but we actually remember when that came out. We were like, "What? Really? There's a McBain film? Oh, come on!"
Oh, wow!
But one of those coincidences, you know.
And, well, Jimmy just pulled it up over there. It's from 1991, and that's great. Right away, it alludes to the fact that it just beat out The Simpsons time wise. That's very funny.
Yeah, just barely showed up before that.
That would be its one claim to fame, I guess.
I think if you look it up, I think if you look it up on IMDb, it's like 2 stars or something like that.
David, you've drawn so many of the iconic scenes in The Simpsons, and I'm wondering how much of it is your idea, your inspiration. You're given a script. You're not told what to draw for the backgrounds, are you?
It depends. I mean, I think in the earlier shows, we had a little bit more latitude. I know that in the very first show I directed, which was called Bart the Genius, I just added something in the beginning with Maggie playing with blocks and spelling out E=MC².
Sure.
As on the storyboard. And there are a few other things like that, but I always would clear it, you know, with the writers and discuss with them. Or if I had a certain, you know, like a piece of acting, you know. I think The Land of Chocolate was just, I just saw it that way. I didn't direct the show. Mark Kirkland directed the show, and I just saw it one specific way, and I boarded it that way. And then Mark came to me and asked me, could you work on these layouts? Because there's no one really capturing what you have on the board in terms of Homer's manic, happy, skipping face.
Oh, the joy that he exudes in that scene is just something. The way his legs just fly across as he gets to the window that says, all chocolate, 50% off.
Yeah, he's pretty happy. It's a very happy place. The idea, I think, really tickled him. And that's what it got to me. This is a really hilarious idea. So, when Homer was on Chili Peppers, I, of course, sort of went to town on that. And I sort of went to town on a few things that I could point out specifically. That, Homer having a heart attack. All you fans of animation out there, look at those ones frame by frame specifically. You might get a few little in the in-between frames. I think it's mostly that. I would give credit what I'm doing to those things.
Well, I think those things are some of the best things that from the show. I wish I could remember the Spanish title for it, but it's something like El Viejo Misterio del Homer the Chili Peppers crazy scene. But by the way, to everybody that's listening, you can follow David Silverman on Twitter. His Twitter handle is Tubatron, TRON, and he has a couple of different images up of designs and drawings that he's done, including the Homer heart attack scene and the Insanity Peppers sketch.
Yeah, if you do follow me, check out what I have on Twitpic as well as under Tubentron if you're interested in these sort of things. What I mainly tweet about, by the way, folks, is all things Simpsons and all things tuba.
Tell me about your tuba fascination, and I'm wondering if the nod of Lisa playing the tuba last night in the 500th episode was a nod to you.
I would like to think it was, but alas, no. Well, maybe Alf Clausen was thinking about me, because Alf and I are very good friends, and I think he's fantastic. But he suggested it to Al Jean, and Al said, sure. And the great Bill Reichenbeck played it. He's a remarkably talented tuba and trombonist studio guy here in L.A., and he's one of the very, very best.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. You know, I did suggest when we were trying to find up an idea for what Lisa should do, because when we went from the Tracy Ullman show to the Simpsons show, Lisa really did not have a clearly defined personality. And the first thing I did was a title sequence, and we didn't really have a working gag for Lisa. I had like a placeholder gag just to point the point we need something for Lisa in the sequence. And we were thinking about what could she be doing, and I think, as I recall, I blurted out that, what if she plays a tuba in the band? You know, ho, ho, ho. And Jim Brooks said, no, I don't like the tuba, but what if she played the saxophone? In fact, said Jim, what if she played it really well? And that could be her personality. She could be the unappreciated genius of the family.
Wow.
And boom, in one sentence, he really nailed a point. And after that meeting, I believe they started working on the episode Moaning Simpson. So, Moaning Simpson and the character Bleeding Gums Murphy.
Right, which is a wonderful classic season two, I believe, episode, right? Or was it season
directed
one?
Directed by the great Wes Archer, who was there at the very beginning.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm plugging my friends.
Oh, that's okay. Your friends are all names that are written in yellow on a black background that I've been looking at for 22 years.
Fantastic.
I'm trying to think where else to go as we run out of time with David Silverman. But what did you think of the 500th episode, and did you not feel like it was very much similar to the themes of the movie which you directed?
Say what now?
Did you find this a similarity between last night's episode and the movie?
I guess there's some. I didn't think about it, but, you know, it's difficult. We've done a lot of shows after 500.
I hope you know I mean that complimentary. I love the movie. I thought it captured all of the themes of the show and did a great job of showing The Simpsons to people who haven't necessarily seen it before.
I kind of like this. One of the things I like about it, and I don't know if it's true, is that one of the things that's great about the show, it also had an echo to Trash of the Titans, which was another milestone episode, in the sense that the Springfield is kind of like moved to a different location, but is just going to be the same. And so I kind of like that ongoing thing. So,
well, there's obviously been a lot of environmental themes. And throughout the history of the show, it's been a recurring theme that the way that American consumerism, if you will, is sort of destroying the planet, and The Simpsons are front and center at it.
Yeah. Now, also, by the way, talking on the softball show, our showrunner at the time, Sam Simon, had a great deal to do about, I think, getting that together as well. He would be a big sports fan and a big baseball fan, and also just hilarious, so...
Well, the show is such that episode is such a love letter to the game and a wonderful sort of snapshot of all of the great ball players of when I was a little kid.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I think I don't know if we had some consciousness in the fact that of that, but it occurred to me that this is, you know, should it, you know, be viewed later, it's a great snapshot. It's almost like a little document of the time. And here were the top dudes, you know. And it still has that. It's a really great window of that time and who was on top.
It's funny because in retrospect, when you look at the lineup of players that hit the field in that episode, it's just a little ironic that Steve Sachs is the one that goes to jail.
Well,
I noticed that. I watched it today. And by the way, it still holds up. It's a fantastic episode, and it's still funny to this day. I remember watching that. I'm 35 now. I was watching that when I was about 14 years old. So not age anyone or anything, but...
No, that's all right. Time punches on. I don't care. You know, every day above ground's a good one.
Absolutely.
So no, it's really, really funny. The whole idea that the police department has said, all these unsolved crimes, it must be this guy.
Yeah, of course, Steve Sachs. Poor guy.
Well, we have Steve coming on in about a half an hour. I really look forward to asking him about his experiences. I know that I think it was Mike Reese that said that he'd never enjoyed working with somebody so much up to that point that he almost fell in love with Steve Sachs during the tapings.
Oh, he's just a lovely guy. He's just a really, really great guy.
Well, that's
he's pretty good on the ball, on the field, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, he was well worthy of being in the Springfield Nine. I understand why Mr. Burns offered him $50,000 to be a ringer.
Oh, absolutely. He's worth every penny of it.
David, before we let you go, I've noticed from the shows that you've directed that we both have a common affinity for Lisa Simpson. I was wondering if you could talk about Lisa as the moral compass of the show for me.
Oh, yeah, it's a really interesting thing. It's a moral compass, and there's something I always enjoy Yardley's readings, by the way. This is from an animation point of view. She has some really interesting tone qualities in her voices and way of phrasing that if you really think about it, if you have the time, it's not always that we have the time, you can get some really interesting sensitive acting into it. And what's great about that is it really can ground a lot of episodes and a lot of jokes. And then the writing can get really, when it's done well, it's really sharp because it can be sometimes expository, but there are great jokes and psych gags that are worked into it. So it's a fun character to work with, and it's a fun character to animate.
She's one of those actors that no matter where she is, what she's in, you know it's Lisa Simpson speaking.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, and it's great that, by the way, from an animation point of view, it's true of all the performers on the show, all their voices, they all have great qualities. I think that's why, from our point of view, we never tire of working on the show, because every time a director gets a new episode, there's always something different because it's just, if nothing else, you know, in the writing and also in the performances.
David, I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. Your show has brought me so much joy over the years, and you have managed to turn these yellow cartoon characters into real cultural icons. And really, anybody who grew up in the late 80s or early 90s looks to The Simpsons for a lot of their references and their intelligence. And, you know, you talked about before how parodies don't work if you don't know what they're parodying. I will disagree with that. So many things, I've learned so many things from watching your show. And it's inspired me to be more inquisitive and to, I was trying to think, there are so many things that I wouldn't know about if it wasn't for The Simpsons.
The Raven episode.
Sure, yeah.
The Treehouse of Horror, I was going to say, David, is iconic as well. It got me to read some Edgar Allan Poe. It really did.
Oh, that's great.
And
that's great.
It really is a moment in animation history on television where you thought, okay, this thing, this Simpsons thing, is hitting a whole nother level. This is not the Flintstones. You know, at first people thought, okay, it's another kind of, it's a modern day Flintstones type thing. But I remember watching Treehouse of Horror and the Raven segment, and I said, wow, this is a whole different level of cartoon and animation.
Well, you know, Matt Groening gave us a great universe to explore so many different places in humor and also in observation. Even starting on the Tracy Ullman show, I remember how we were looking forward to working with Matt's drawing style and bringing that to life in animation. And it's just been very inspiring for everybody that's worked on the show. And I'm glad to hear all this. And I'll just quote one thing that I heard from the great musician Spike Jones from one of his recordings. And that is, if you enjoyed our little act, tell all your friends and hurry back.
I promise you we will. I look forward to laughing at The Simpsons forever. And I really appreciate you answering my tweet last week. It's been an honor to talk to you and have you on the show.
Oh, it's great of you to say, and I've enjoyed every minute. So thanks, everybody.
Wonderful.
Really enjoyed this.
Awesome, David. Thank you so much.
Okay, then.
Have a great night.
Bye now. Right.
That's David Silverman from The Simpsons.
Congratulations to everyone over at The Simpsons on the
500th episode. How about that?
25 years of television. They'll be catching up to The Tonight Show very soon.
Unreal. Let's take a call. 514-790-0990. This is The Kaufman Show. Tell I had fun with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really,
yeah, you were geeking out, my friend.
I'm beaming from ear to ear.
Yeah, big smile on his face. Totally geeking out.
The Simpsons is a huge passion for me. And like I said at the end there, one of the main reasons that I'm as inquisitive as I am is because of all the little things about that show that I wanted to figure out, all the jokes that I wanted to get. I watched Citizen Kane because of The Simpsons.
There you go.
And sat there and went, whoa, that scene's from that, and that scene's from that, and that scene's from that. Anyway, we got Crazy John on the phone. Crazy John, it says Montreal. Are you in Montreal?
I am not tonight.
No, you're in Denver, Colorado, aren't you?
Indeed.
Okay. Sunny Denver, Colorado.
Yes, actually, it was today.
Oh, well, that was odd. I pulled that out of nowhere. How are you?
I am well, man.
Did you enjoy that?
I am here. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Did you enjoy the interview with David Silverman?
Oh, man, you didn't ask him my question.
What was your question?
How the Sideshow Bob saga is going to conclude.
Well, Sideshow Bob had a cameo in the episode last night, so you know
he
that
did.
It's he's not going to give
away. I just
hope
that wasn't the episode for the year. He has to be in every year.
No, he'll be in every year. Obviously, everybody loves Kelsey Grammer as Sideshow Bob, one of the classic characters in the history of The Simpsons.
Honestly, I love the entire family. In eighth grade, we had to write whatever we wanted in creative writing. I wrote a Simpsons fan fiction where I just did the whole Sideshow Bob and Cecil thing. That was played by David Hyde Pierce, by the way. I am a huge Simpsons nerd, and I am not afraid to admit it.
John, I want to thank you for the call. We're going to keep talking Simpsons all night, and I hope you can be a part of it. And then we're going to switch over to Gary Carter talk in about an hour, but going to have some fun until then. John?
Oh, I thought you were ditching me. I thought you were ditching me already.
We were, but I was going to let you say goodnight to me.
Yeah. We always let you say goodbye,
goodbye
John.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Crazy John. That was stellar. I appreciate John's calls. We missed him last week.
What's with the crazy thing now?
I don't know. He
didn't have that before,
He did initially, and I called him John the Sensible.
Oh, John
like
the Sensible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because usually you see on the board it says John from Denver, and now it's Crazy John in Montreal. And
exactly.
Is he trying to dupe us or something? Or?
We've got our next celebrity guest joining us right now. We've got Andrew Buchholz on the phone. He's from Yahoo, and congratulations are in order because Andrew just got himself a gig with Awful Announcing, one of the great sports websites out there. Congrats, Andrew.
Hey, thanks very much, guys.
How are you? I'm feeling at my utmost geekiest right now.
Absolutely.
Just had a great chat with David Silverman and having a lot of fun.
Always a good thing. Yeah, you can never go wrong with a good round of Simpsons dialogue.
Well, that's it. I'll tell you this. I've not only grown up watching it, but when I haven't been near a television and I've been hanging out with friends, it's often the thing that we talk about.
Mm-hmm. That's why we don't date much.
The trick is finding a girl who's as into it as you are, Jay.
That is a trick, my friend.
Yeah, the problem is there aren't enough female comic book guys in the world.
I think that's a good thing. Andrew, you said you have a great anecdote for us on The Simpsons.
Yeah, I do. One of the things that really I got into The Simpsons during my teenage years, and I used to watch them with my dad a lot. And he's also been in the media business for a while, done a lot of stuff in community newspapers. And we were watching the one Bart to the Future, where they're shown where they go to the Indian casino and Bart.
Yeah, and Lisa's the president.
Yeah, Lisa's the president. And there's a great little bit in there where Billy Carter's ghost shows up and talks about how they packed Jimmy packed him off to the World Belly Flop Championships while he was making peace in the Middle East. I was off doing belly flops. And my dad just breaks out. He cracks up at this because this World Belly Flop Championships was this thing in Vancouver for about 4 or 5 years.
Oh, no.
He was actually there covering this when they had Billy Carter as a celebrity judge.
Oh, my God. So that's awesome.
So he was just, I can't believe they actually knew about this.
Oh, that's great.
It just goes to show you the level of detail that went into that show, right? I mean, there's so many references that a few people get, but if you get them, they just make your whole day.
That's exactly how I feel, Andrew. Thank you so much for sharing your memory with us. We greatly appreciate it, and we'll catch up soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Have a great night. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Bye.
We're just rolling, gathering no moss here. Hey, Jay.
Dave.
What's up?
Nothing, just tweeting a little bit here.
Yeah, a little here and there. I have not had time to look at my phone.
That's okay. You just leave it to me, buddy.
Okay.
That's what I'm here for.
I'm not doing nothing other than talking.
You just geek out.
Simpsons and some softball.
Strange and... women, and I will handle the tweets here.
Yeah, and I see you're doing a fine job. Our thanks to Tubertron watching. Kaufman geek out was pleasurable and disturbing. Wow. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
We have our next guest. Unbelievable. We are just rolling along here.
They're coming on.
We're going to bring in a one-time Juno Award winner who is a two-time nominee this year. I now call him a friend as well. He is the bassist in Arkells. Nick Dyka, good evening.
Dave, how's it going?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Good.
I've been talking Simpsons for about 30 minutes on a sports radio station, and I haven't been fired yet, so everything's rolling along just fine.
No, it's been entertaining. I was just listening to the interviews. It's great to know that there's so many people out there who like The Simpsons as much as you do. Because sometimes you feel just a little bit, you know, a little bit off when you make that reference and everyone's looking at you and nobody quite knows what you're talking about. So, yeah, it's good. It's good to hear you guys talking Simpsons so much.
I knew you were down when you sent out a tweet saying, check out the podcast of The Kaufman Show because it's got Clancy and Loosing and Jammin' on it.
Oh, yeah. It's just some of the greatest Simpsons moments or when one of the characters is sick.
Did we just lose Nick Dyka? Nick, are you there?
Yep. Oh, sorry, I'm here.
Yeah, you cut out for a second.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just saying that some of my favorite moments on The Simpsons are when they have that musical moment where it's one of the characters, you know, whether it's, like you were saying, like Chief Wiggum and Lou singing Bob Marley or Homer singing Taking Care of Business or Apu singing Sergeant Pepper. There.
Oh, goodness. And who's singing Sergeant Pepper was fantastic. I forgot about that one.
Oh, yeah. It's a great one. And I recently listened to it, actually, because of the website you sent me, SimSongs. It's I'm annoying everybody. When we've been touring, and I just in the van constantly. I'm playing.
Here's one for you, Nick, that I like a lot.
Sugar, do, 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 do. Aw, honey, honey, do, 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 do. You are my gum.
And unfortunately, the batteries die out on Homer's Walkman, if you want to date that episode. Yeah. Nick, I would imagine that one day you're hoping that Arkells will be on The Simpsons.
Oh, yes. That would be one of those... you know, career benchmarks that you could just look back and that would be a good one. We got to, they used one of our songs in a Blue Jays commercial this summer for Sportsnet. And that was one of those ones where you look back and you think, wow, if I was a kid, I could never imagine this happening. Us being on The Simpsons would definitely be, another one of those.
They say you haven't really made it unless you've been, captured graining style, you know, unless you've been immortalized graining style, you have not made it.
Well,
yeah, that's right.
In the meantime, you do have the benchmark that you guys had a song on 90210.
That's true. That's not quite true.
The Simpsons, but to a certain demographic and a certain, I'm sure the girls are thrilled and love that. And I'm sure that's gotten you quite a few Twitter followers.
Well, hey, you know, between you, me and Jay, I'd be lying if I've ever seen an episode of 90210.
Why must you turn the radio station into a house of lies? Come on.
Oh, he's talking about the new one. I'm sure you've seen the old 90210.
Yeah, I was talking about
That's cooler anyway, so that's okay.
Yeah. Nick, when I spoke to you this weekend, I told you that I would probably not be making it to the show in Toronto, and then I saw the bill for the show in Toronto, and I'm going to do my darndest to get to the Horseshoe and see you on March 3rd, because that looks like just an amazing night of music.
Oh, no, that's awesome. Yeah, we'll have to, if you're able to make it, we'll have to, quote some more Simpsons episodes.
I promise.
And, do some more, like, top 10 periphery characters, you know, top 10 family members. Well, I guess you can't have 10 family members, but
if you throw in all the extra Simpsons that we've seen throughout the years, I'm sure we could stretch it and get to 10. All the dumb cousins from that episode. And
that's right. All the dumb males and the smart females.
That's right. The intelligent Bouviers and the dumb Simpsons. So
yeah.
What else is new? Nick Dyka, thank you so much for your time tonight. And,
anytime, Dave.
We, as you know, we love your music. Your song "Deadlines" is our theme song, and
that's a first for us. This is the first time we've been used as a theme song. So
awesome!
We're all really happy and proud and excited.
Well, it's a great song for some journalists that have deadlines to meet, and and it absolutely pumps us up every Monday at 11 o'clock. We will we'll catch up soon, man. Thanks so much.
Great. Take care, guys.
Have a great night.
See ya.
All right. Well. I'm thinking we should take a quick commercial break and catch up, Jimmy. And then we will be joined by Rick Miller, McHomer. My goodness, I saw that at the Fringe forever ago. Liked it so much, I went back the next day. That's right. I went back the next day because it was awesome.
It kind of helps that we had a rock and roller on there to geek out with us. We don't seem so nerdy anymore.
That's right. It helps our cred, doesn't it?
Our street cred.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And then we will get back to our Simpsons Spectacular with Rick Miller, McHomer.
Well, beer, we've had some great times. When I was 17, I drank some very good beer. I drank some very good beer I purchased with a fake ID. My name was Brian McGee. I stayed up listening to Queen. When I was 17.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board. We got John Kakalakis editing his butt off in the other room, and we appreciate it.
He's in the man cave in the other room there.
And because of that, everything will be up on iTunes after the show tonight, as well as at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. I want to thank my friend Ken Ain from Ottawa, Ontario, with his buddies Dave Smith and Craig Mainprize. They are Phantom Shores, and they composed the song that you just heard coming in off the break. I like the little allusion to the B-sharps right off the top. There's some banjo in there, slide guitar for the Simpsons theme. Great job, Ken. Love the song. It will be available on the Kaufman Show website as soon as the show is done tonight. Let's go to our next guest, Jimmy. Very excited to speak with this man. I saw his play, McHomer, at the Montreal Fringe Festival many, many moons ago. Liked it so much that I went back the next day. Have seen it since on future runs at the Fringe, and he's still doing it. It's amazing. I'm so happy. He must be bringing so many people around the world joy. He's toured on all five continents, I believe. And he will be at the Manitoba Theatre for Young People in Winnipeg from February 22nd to March 2nd. Rick Miller, McHomer, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Dave.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Can you believe that it's been 500 episodes?
I got, you know, I haven't actually seen a Simpsons episode in quite a while, but I watched 500 the other. What did you think?
I thought it reminded me a lot of the movie. I thought it had the sort of big sweeping themes of the film, and I liked it. I'm one of the fans of the movie. I loved sitting in that theater and seeing them so big. I thought it was just such a rush.
You know, we're sold on the show, obviously, but I was watching it with my father-in-law, who has never seen an episode before, and he said, "It's amazing you have made a career with this stuff." You know, he clearly wasn't sold on the show, and I thought, you know what? I was the right age when it came out. You know, I was in college, and everybody was watching The Simpsons on Sunday night. It was just, you know, and that was kind of the spirit of what I wanted to bring to my play. I wanted to make Shakespeare like that.
Which is quite the feat. Now, for those of you who don't know, Rick does Macbeth by himself and imitates 50 different Simpsons characters. It is 50, right?
Yeah, it's 50 different characters. Some in for, you know, a line or two or a, you know, that sort of little thing. But most of them are in for for a good chunk of Macbeth. And yeah, it's Shakespeare's bloodiest tragedy, and it's one dysfunctional family doing another dysfunctional family.
Would you mind giving us some examples?
Yeah, sure. I'll do my little trailer of Simpsons Voices. It's a very visual show, especially since you've seen it. It's become much more multimedia and, you know, fills up these big thousand-seat theaters. But here are little audio bits of McHomer. You're going to hear a whole bunch of characters, so see who you can name. A tale of sorcery. Arr, when shall we three be meeting again? In thunder, lightning, arr, in rain, har, har. When the hurly-burly is done, when the battle is lost, and one.
Well, that will be ere the set of sun.
Where the place?
Upon the heath.
There to meet with McHomer. God, don't say that, it's bad luck. A tale of royalty. What bloody man is that?
A fan of Ross, sir?
Oh, hello. I'm actor Troy McClure. You might remember me from other Simpsons Do Shakespeare classics, such as Othello and Hamlet.
Excellent. A tale of illusion.
A dagger which I see before me.
Or a pizza. Pizza.
Oh, damn spot. Oh, I say.
A tale of debauchery.
Oh, with a soulmate, friend, you do lie, soulmate.
Faith, sir, we were carousing till the second cock. Uh-oh, radio shouldn't have said that word. Finally, a tale of murder. Hey there, strangers, what's for the old trap? Let it come down. Bring it down, man. Oh, treachery. Anyway, I can go on and on, Dave, right?
Wow. Wow, that's
midnight,
incredible.
So I'm just hanging in there.
Yeah, I'm picturing you sitting in your basement trying not to wake your family right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. I got my kids going, Daddy.
Not again. That was amazing.
Wow, thank you, Rick. Do your kids? Are your kids old enough to appreciate The Simpsons?
You know, it's funny. When they're going to come see the show. It's all going to Winnipeg next week and then to Saskatoon. I'm bringing it back to the old places that I used to take it when I did The Fringe many, many years ago. And my five-year-old is going to come see it for the first time. My nine-year-old has seen it a couple times, but they still don't quite get what it is and, you know, what The Simpsons are, what I do.
Well, not to mention the whole Shakespeare part of it.
Shakespeare, too. You know? It's a little bit beyond them, right? But you know what? They kind of get that Daddy makes people laugh and that people pay him money to do that. And, you know, it's partly the house that they live in has been, you know, thanks to not just McHomer. I do a lot of other stuff in my career, too. But I've had such great success with this show. And that's partly, obviously, because Shakespeare is good. But I think more importantly, because The Simpsons are good.
Have you ever heard from The Simpsons people? And I'm sort of indirectly asking, have they ever threatened to sue you?
I think the lawyers would you know, probably wished I had gone away a long time ago. But fortunately, when the show made it big in 2000, I was at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is the world's largest arts festival.
Sure.
And I'm sold out for a month in a big theater. And on my one night off, The Simpsons, who are kind of doing a European tour, this is Matt Groening and all the actors, all the writers, all the producers, except Julie Kavner. She doesn't do those things. But anyway, they were going around Europe, and they were coming up to Edinburgh in my theater again to do a, you know, a Q&A sort of thing like they did on the Actors Studio. And at that stage, I only had kind of a tacit little, okay, go ahead, from someone in the legal department. But that was when I had a little Fringe show. Now it was getting big. It was being in demand all over the world. So I met them all at a party afterwards, and I finally had the nerve to introduce myself to Dan Castellaneta, who, as you know, does so many great voices. And I kind of said, okay, I'm the McHomer guy. And I felt the world stopped all of a sudden. He turned to me and went, to be or not to be, which, you know, of course, is Hamlet, so it's the wrong play. But he broke the ice, and next thing you know, I was this party trick being led around the room, and Hank Azaria was, you know, sharing Apu tips with me. It was just really, really interesting. And next thing you know, I'm in front of Matt Groening, who is exceedingly generous and has allowed me to keep doing the show, even though technically, I think legally, he doesn't own the characters or the voices. But through his generosity and the generosity of his office, I've been allowed to essentially keep doing McHomer and, you know, frankly, making, you know, 500,000 people pretty happy around the world.
Rick, let's hope that they have the same spirit of kindness and generosity towards our show for playing their clips tonight.
I would hope so. You know, you're talking to David Silverman, right? And I talked to some of the writers at some point. Some of them were Canadian, as you know, they know about me. They certainly do. And for so long, they had avoided doing a Simpsons Do Shakespeare thing,
right,
partly because they didn't want to feel that they had, you know, run out of story ideas so much that they had to copy this.
But they did do Macbeth, didn't they?
They did it. They eventually did it. They caved in and did it, even though they knew that, you know, they didn't want to feel they were copying me, you know, which they told me. And I thought, well, I've had some sort of small influence in the pop culture cosmos.
more than a small, you've made it accessible. And
well, it's one of the good things. I keep doing the show because English teachers love me. And frankly, high school kids hate Shakespeare a little bit less after seeing McComber. And if I've done any good in the world, at least, you know, I've contributed to making some people actually appreciate Shakespeare and, you know, dig into the other plays and maybe even read the real Macbeth.
You can check him out at machomer.com. He's at the Manitoba Theater for Young People starting February 22nd, running through March the 2nd for all of our Winnipeg listeners. Off to Saskatoon after that and then New York City, right?
Yeah, then New York.
Okay. I'd imagine we have an equal amount of listeners in New York City as we do to Winnipeg. So you
cheers, Dave. Thanks for having me on
the
show.
You can plug that one, too. When are you in New York?
I'm in New York March 30th and 31st, and then I do a week right after that, I do my other play in New York called Bigger Than Jesus. But that's a whole other story. From Homer to Jesus, we don't need to go there now.
We'll have you on in our Tim Tebow spectacular to talk about that.
All right.
you can follow him on at Rick Miller Actor on Twitter. Rick, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Cheers, Dave. Thanks, man. That was fun.
Yes, it sure was. I appreciate it.
So long.
That was impressive. I really thought that was an audio clip he was playing.
No,
he was doing it live, and you should have seen the glances that were exchanged in here. It was amazing.
That was really awesome. A lot of fun to have Rick Miller on the show. And once again, I saw that play so many years ago. I encourage anyone that's in the city where it is, we'll have to tell our buddies down at Third and Long Pub in New York City to go check out McComber in a few weeks when it hits the Big Apple. And thanks to Rick Miller. Let's bring in our next guest. Just keeps the hits keep coming. Elias Tufexis. How are you?
What's up, boys?
You beautiful man. Are you back in Toronto?
I am.
Oh, goodness. Well, at least do you still have the Habs t-shirt on you were wearing yesterday?
No, that's my bad luck shirt, man. I shouldn't have worn that to the game. You know why? What? I bought that in Toronto. Here's a weird story.
Oh, there you go.
I bought it in Toronto because Michael Ironside had invited me to his house to watch the Habs play.
Oh, you name dropper.
Oh, here he goes.
And so I was like, I didn't know. I was just working here. I didn't have any, that's my daughter coughing on my chest.
Oh. I was like, who's laughing at you for Michael Ironside in your house?
his daughter, that's exactly who's laughing at him.
She's like, yeah, keep name-dropping that. I didn't have any Habs jersey, so I bought that one. And they lost to Pittsburgh that day. And every time I've worn it since, and it's such a nice shirt, but I think it's time to burn it.
Well, Elias, it was really nice to meet you yesterday and to attend the Gary Carter tribute with you. But
yeah,
we're here to talk about some happy stuff right now. And why don't you share a Simpsons memory with our audience?
Well, there are two things. There's one joke that Jay and I have been saying for years, and it's what Mr. Burns says when he asks Smithers to get him players. And he says, fine, find me living players. I want you to call them the National League, the American League, the Negro League.
Elias?
That's the funniest part of the show.
Elias?
Yeah.
Some good players, living players, scour the professional ranks, the American League, the National League, the Negro League.
I'm on my way, sir.
Followed by, you have 24 hours.
That may be the most brilliant joke in the entire episode.
That's so funny.
Because there's so many implications there, and it's so funny. It just shows where Mr. Burns' turn-of-the-century type mentality.
What did you say? In fact, your center fielder has been dead for 130 years.
Yeah.
I wonder who it is.
Yeah.
The center fielder that would have been dead in 1880.
God. It's got to be like somebody like Albert Goodwill Spalding or something like that.
That, and I think, Jay, you were there with me when we actually did the Darryl to Dow Strawberry.
Yeah.
At the Olympic Stadium. We were talking about a tear rolling down his face.
Right, yeah.
Like in the show. Yeah. And then he hit a home run. I think he hit a grand slam.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That was, yeah, I remember that game. We were doing the Darryl, and it was very popular at the time because of that softball episode.
Yeah.
And we were trying to see if there would be a tear rolling down his face. Well, there wasn't. There was a ball going off his bat.
Yeah, a tear rolling down our face.
Yeah.
I love Strawberry in that episode, Elias. I thought the way that he's a suck up to Mr. Burns is just one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
But I have 9 home runs today.
I want to assure those of you whose names are not on the list that I'm very disappointed in you. Something was lacking. Let's call it heart.
Oh.
Hey, I call for that.
Put a lid on it, Simpson. There's no I in team.
Some of these guys have a bad attitude, Skip.
They sure do, Strawberry.
That one's fun. And, of course, when he first meets him, he's like, you're Dow Strawberry. You play right field. I play field. Well, Are you better than me? Well, I've never met you, but yes.
Elias, thank you so much for having the same passion for The Simpsons that I do.
Oh, no, man. My pleasure. The Simpsons is something I quote every day.
Oh, good. Well, we'll continue to go back and forth on Twitter with it. You can follow him on Twitter at Elias2Fexis, T-O-U-F-E-X-I-S. Good friend of the Kaufman shows, good friend of the Farrar boys. And
yeah.
I hope your daughter's cough gets better.
Yeah, she's just half asleep coughing on my chest here. Of course, she woke up right when I had to call. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Elias. Have a great night.
Buy an Expos jersey.
Yeah, for real.
You'll have to explain that one.
Yes, Elias was, we were shown on Hockey Night in Canada last night. Anakin Slade, Jay Farrar, myself, and Elias Defexis. One of those things was not like the other. Three were in Expos jerseys. One was rocking his Habs t-shirt.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
All right, guys.
Thank you very much.
See you later.
See the comments on Facebook. Hey, who's the guy with the Habs jersey? Get him out of there. That's the kind of comments we were getting, especially after that game.
Jimmy, can we go back out on my buddy Ken's Simpsons tribute song? Because we like it so much. Thank you. This is the Kaufman Show. And we're going to be joined by Steve Sachs when we return.
Awesome.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Stay tuned.
We're talking softball. We're talking
Well, Mr. Burns had done it. The power plant had won it, with Roger Clemens clucking all the while. Mike Socia's tragic illness made us smile, while Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile. We're talking softball, from Maine to San Diego. Talking softball, Mattingly and Canseco, and Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running to the wrong. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw. We're talking softball, from Maine to San Diego. Talking softball, Mattingly and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board, and tonight's been my love letter to The Simpsons. It will continue for a few minutes more as we bring in our next guest. It's Steve Sachs, all the way from Sacramento, California.
Sacramento? I heard there was a murder there once that went unsolved.
Steve?
Yeah, right. That was me.
Well, that explains where you've been for all these years. Finally out of Springfield Penitentiary and joining us on the Kaufman Show. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you, and brings back a lot of memories hearing that song about doing that Simpsons segment, and it was a lot of fun doing it, and I get a lot of acclaim for that, so. It all turned out real well.
I'm going to play a little clip just to give people some context. Steve, here we go.
Reach for your license. Slowly.
Well, well, Steve Sachs from New York City.
I heard some guy got killed in New York City and they never solved the case. But you wouldn't know anything about that now, would you, Steve?
But there's hundreds of unsolved murders in New York City.
You don't know when to keep your mouth shut, do you, sexy boy?
It's funny, Steve, that probably took you less than an hour to record, and here we are 20 years later still talking about it.
Yeah, when we first did that, The Simpsons was just kind of getting off the ground, but we knew it was a good show, and we thought it was going to be fun. Don Mattingly and I were team members with the Yankees, and so we came over and did it in the studio at the same time, and we didn't know that it was going to get this much traction. But it's turned out well, and it's been a favorite for a lot of people because there were so many different moving parts in that segment, and so it was a lot of fun.
There's something very comical about all of the tragedies that befall each player in the episode.
Yeah, you know, there just seems to be he finds a way to, nail every guy on there so he can't come and play with the team. Don Mattingly had the problem with his hair. Canseco, I guess, was saving people from a house. And then I, of course, got nailed for every unsolved murder in New York City. And it was pretty funny how they did the whole thing. And, like I said, I still have people talking to me about it, saying, man, what was that like on The Simpsons? And everybody on that staff on The Simpsons was just great, really great people to work with.
Is it something that you and the other eight guys have talked about since, that there's sort of a fraternity of being on this show?
Yeah, when we get together for different baseball events, it does come up. And, lots of times people on the periphery will bring it up when we're at an event or whatnot, or, there'll be a question from an audience. They'll ask something about The Simpsons. And, here we are, like you said, 20 years later, still talking about it. So they did something right.
Did it make you a fan?
Yeah, I was already a fan of The Simpsons, so that's why it was a no-brainer. I mean, they asked us to come on, and I said, sure. I mean, I didn't think twice about it. They did the voice dubbing down in Anaheim where we're playing against the Angels. So we just went into the studio and did it. Oddly enough, it takes them 9 months to do one episode because they have to dub the voices to the lips, and they send the material over to Japan to do it all and get it all correct. And so for one episode, though, it takes them almost a year to do it.
Wow. I wonder if that's that process has sped up in the last 20 years.
It probably has been, I would say, with the way things are now digital and whatnot. I would say it probably even gets a better quality.
Would it be fair to say that that is your favorite Simpsons episode of all time?
Oh, no question. As a matter of fact, they gave us this big dictionary of every Simpsons show that was done, and they gave like a rundown on what the show is about. And our show was rated as one of the top Simpsons shows of all time.
Yes, I know for myself, I keep using the word iconic, and I hate reusing a word as big as that, but I can't think of anything else that suits it. It's just a snapshot of a certain place in time that made me very happy. And I know you got thrown in jail in the episode, Steve, but regardless, it still makes me very happy.
Yeah, thank you. And, the company or the show just seems to be always a way to reinvent itself and come up with another episode that's good because, there's a lot of competition out there now with The Simpsons. There's all these different shows and that are trying to go down that same channel that they went. And but they've still been able to stay on top and put out a good product.
Yeah, nothing, none of the other cartoons out there match the intelligence of The Simpsons, that's for sure.
Right, right. And they've got all that goodwill built in, too, Homer and just the way they look and whatnot. It's kind of hard to try to piggyback on them directly because they've had such a staple in that type of programming.
Steve, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit about what you're up to now. Because I find it quite interesting. I was reading on the net, and I think that our listeners would be very interested.
Well, yeah, what I'm doing now is I really enjoy what I'm doing. I love speaking. I do motivational speaking all over North America, mostly to associations and companies. And I also do a lot of executive and personal coaching, life coaching and executive coaching for people as well. So I've been doing that for quite some time now, and I just really love it. I love helping people and it's a great way to reach out, and it gives me a lot of personal growth as well. And so something I really enjoy doing. So anybody wants to contact me or get a hold of me on any one of those, they can go to my website at stevesackspeaks.com or stevesackscoaches.com. Either one of those, and they can hook me up.
Now, Steve, you do life coaching. You also talk to players, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I do. And I don't know if I will have a particular area that I'm just going to be working in. It doesn't seem to be where I just work with players. I work with executives and just people that I have some housewives, I have some some guys that work in just normal throughout business, and I, it pretty much runs the gamut as far as different types of people that I work with. But, you know, it seems it's fitting that someday I'll just have a lot of athletes I work with, but it really hasn't been that way. It's been pretty much across the spectrum. I'm coaching a few Lutheran pastors down in Tennessee right now, which I really love as well. So it kind of goes all over the place.
What are you coaching them on?
It's just personal coaching, you know, how to be better and bring about a lot of life experience. And, you know, I really find that the different things I've done in my life, like sports and, you know, I was a financial consultant for 10 years. So I really found that sports and business and life are pretty much, you know, they all run along the same lines. I mean, I think sports is really a mirror of life when you consider all the different things that you go through, you know, the politics and travel and goods and bads and, you know, sacrifice. And there's just lots of same things that you can say are synonymous with sports and just everyday life.
Steve, you went through a period in your career where you had trouble throwing the ball to first base.
I did.
And unfortunately, your name was sort of replaced Steve Blasses. But what I'm wondering is...
And then Chuck Knobloch took it over for me.
Well, that's right. I was wondering if you spoke with Chuck when he was having his troubles.
Yeah, that's a good question. As a matter of fact, I did speak with him. Man, I can tell you what, he was right in the middle of it, and I could feel it from him. I could see it in his eyes that he was really deep into this thing. This thing was into his psyche. You see, when fear and doubt creep into your psyche, I mean, you've got to really do a turnabout. You've got to really bite this thing back in the face and challenge it. You have to surrender to the fact that you're going to do whatever you can do. You're going to burn every bridge in your life if you have to go out and conquer this problem. This, to me, became more than a baseball thing. This was more than making an error or winning a game. This became a quest. This became a quest on myself as a person. And that's what I had to do. I had to accept this thing as a fight and the fight of my life, because I was faced with something that could have wrecked my career. And luckily, it didn't, and I went on to, you know, when I went to the Yankees, I was a top fielding second baseman in my position. Coming from a position where I was with the Dodgers, where I was just into an abyss. I was into a mental chasm that was just beyond reach. It was so disheartening. I nearly became really disenfranchised with even the whole sports industry anymore. I considered quitting. I mean, it was so awful to me. I was the loneliest person in the world.
That must have been very difficult. And now you're coaching and developing and mentoring, and you must see it on professional athletes. And I mean, we'll use the athletes right now. I imagine you see it in daily life. And I know that people struggle with confidence in really anything on a day-to-day basis, but
absolutely.
What would you say to a professional athlete who's struggling, who's not doing all that he could or should be doing, and especially nowadays when there's the financial expectations and pressures that there weren't necessarily as much? When the salaries have become so obscene, people really have expectations that are not necessarily reflective of person's abilities.
Right. And what they have to do in that instance, Dave, I believe, is that they have to ask themselves, what is your why? And why do you want to be successful? You see, if your why is powerful, the how becomes easy. And that's what you have to dig down and grab onto. You see, when I was going through that throwing problem, I needed somebody to throw me a line. Man, I needed something to grab onto. And luckily, when I was going through that whole problem, it was my dad that saved my career.
Wow.
Absolutely saved my career on the last day of his life. And he died 8 hours before he gave me the advice. And 8 hours later, he passed away. But he gave me the advice that saved my career. And I talk about that in my book Shift, that just came out a few months ago. And I talk about that a lot in my speeches, too, because it was such a great learning mechanism for me in my life. And I talk a lot about that in my coaching, too. It's if nothing else, metaphorically, it really does help me a lot, and still today it does.
Steve, with a teaser like that, I think you just sold a whole bunch of copies of that book.
Well, they can go right on my website and get it if they want, stevesackspeaks.com.
Steve, would you mind holding on while we take a commercial break, and then we're going to come back and shift tones, and I'd like to get your thoughts on Gary Carter.
That would be great.
Thank you. This is the Kaufman Show. It's been so much fun to talk Simpsons. I wish we could do it all night, but frankly, I do it every day. I just don't get to do it on the radio. I want to thank all of our guests, David Silverman, Rick Miller, Elias Tefexis, Nick Dyka, Andrew Buchholz, and of course, Steve Sachs. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. One more Simpsons song, just for measure.
There's nothing on earth like a genuine, bona fide, electrified six-car monorail. What'd I say?
Monorail.
What's it called?
Monorail.
That's right, monorail.
Monorail. Monorail. Monorail.
I hear those things are awfully loud.
It glides as softly as a cloud. Is there a chance the track could bend? Not on your life, my Hindu friend.
What about us Brendan slobs?
You'll be given cushy jobs.
Were you sent here by the devil?
No, good sir, I'm on the level.
The ring came off my pudding can.
Take my penknife, my good man. I swear it's Springfield's only choice. Throw up your hands and raise your voice. What's it called?
Cracked and broken.
Sorry, Mom, the mob has spoken.